Madam President, I move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection? All right, the agenda is approved. First on our agenda is persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Madam Clerk, if you could read the rules on this.
Okay. Public comment pertaining to education on non-agenda items is limited to 3 minutes per person per meeting. There will be up to 1 hour for persons to be heard. Public comment on agenda items will be taken at the time the item is considered. This is your opportunity to be heard, and the board will not respond to your comments. As per board policy 1312, individuals testifying may not discuss complaints against individual employees. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributed to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be the grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. And there's a maximum of 1 hour per meeting, and this is the first half hour. And persons to be heard, we have Julie Carson. Carlson? Okay. Well, Julie Carlson? Okay.
All right. If any other person in the audience would like to come forward and speak on non-agenda items, you're invited at this time. All right. So, see no one, we will move on with the agenda. We're going to move right into administrative reports. Dr. Promo.
Thank you, Madam President. At this time, we'll invite the speaker forward, and Mr. Luke Fulp will introduce. Usually we do have a board report on our comprehensive annual financial report, or our CAFR, which is basically an audit and checking our balanced budget and how we did for the previous year, which moves us into this current year and next. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Promo. We have Eric Campbell. He's our principal auditor, and he's with BDO. There was a name change, and Eric may explain more about this as he presents, but around July, the were acquired by BDO, and they were formerly known as McCunda Cottrell. So we still have the same auditors, just different name, and he's here to present our CAFR. So if there's any questions at the end, either Eric or myself can answer those.
All right. Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Promo. Is that everybody? Student representative. Okay, thank you again. My name is Eric Campbell. I'm with BDO. We are the CPA firm that performed the audit for June 30, 2013. I think everybody probably has a CAFR, I believe. What I did on the slides is I actually broke out sort of some of the highlights within the CAFR just sort of hit some of the highlights. Is that okay? Let's see. Okay. In the very beginning of the CAFR, there's an introductory section prepared by management introducing everybody to the district. Starting on page 27 through 29, that is our opinion on the financial statements, and I highlighted the most important paragraph within that opinion is, in our opinion, the financial statements are fairly presented in all material respects. So that is a clean opinion or an unqualified opinion on your financial statements. So that's what you want to say. Huh? On page 43 of your financial statements, we have your statement of net position. This includes all of your long-term assets and your long-term liabilities. With your long-term assets and liabilities included, you have a total of $34.8 million of assets. 17.9 of that is cash. You have $16.6 million of liabilities, so your total net position is $18.1 million. On page 45, this is similar, only this excludes your long-term assets and liabilities. This is your balance sheet, and your balance sheet is more along the lines of what the numbers that you use to budget. So I think this is probably a more important schedule within your financial statements. Your balance sheet is broken out by your general fund, and that's really the fund that you're budgeting with. You're struggling with the budget every year, I'm sure, like everybody else. So you have your general fund and then your large funds, your Title I-A and your capital projects are your larger funds. And then there's a non-major fund category. That is all your smaller funds combined. And then further back in the financial statements, it gives you a breakout of these smaller funds. So in this budgetary basis of accounting, on the far right-hand column, your total assets are $32.4 million. 16.5 of that is cash. Your total liabilities are $16.4 million, giving you a total fund balance of $15.9, almost $16 million. That $16 million is made up of almost $1.5 in your smaller funds. I have a breakout on the far right-hand column of your slide of what that is. $737 is student transportation. $645 is your food service. Sioux Valley has $97,000. The Sioux Valley Fire Fund has $97,000. And R.J. Jones, $5,768. Your fund balance is comprised of a little over $6 million in your capital project funds. That is, you know, funds designated to help with some of your larger projects that are going on right now within the district. And $8.4 million of that fund balance is related to the general fund. The next slide is from page 47 of your financial statements. In page 47, you can see that $271 million was your total revenue for the year. $270 million were your total expenses. So your revenue exceeded your expenses by $1.8 million for the year. On the far left-hand column is the general fund. You see your general fund had $235 million of revenues, $230 million of expenses. So the general fund, you brought in $5.4 million worth of revenue and expenses. You had to transfer $1.3 million to other funds to cover the operations of some of your other funds, which left you an increase of $4.1 million of fund balance in the general fund. So your fund balance went from $4.3 to $8.4 million in the general fund this year. Now, I mentioned that there's two transfers. Capital project funds, $764,000 went there, and food service, $542,000 went to your food service fund. Then on page 49, you have what are called your proprietary funds. These are enterprise funds and internal service funds. Enterprise funds are funds that are, the revenues are supposed to help cover the expenses or completely cover the expenses of those activities. Your largest one that you've had forever would be like your construction trades fund, where you build houses, sell them. And then your internal service fund is your workers' comp fund, and then we establish a self-insurance fund, I believe. $167,000, I think, self-insurance fund was established 2 years ago. In those funds, total assets, $332 for your enterprise, $1.2 million for your internal service, and net position, $200,000 in your enterprise funds, and $167,000 in your internal service funds. Basically, all your activity was in your workers' comp. you between $1.5 million of revenue, $1.5 million of expenses, and your workers' comp fund. Page 69 of your financial statements. I always like to point this out. What this is has your original budget in the far left column. And then the third column is your actual expenditures. The original budget is the budget that you pretty much prepare 1 to 2 years in advance before the year even starts. And so you're kind of really trying to project that there and reaching to figure out what you're going to do. Like right now you're presenting, I mean, you're working on 2015's budget. You know, I was just talking about this, what you're doing today. So, you know, you're trying to, you're trying to guess what's going to happen a year to 2 years in advance. So I would like to see how that compares. And you can see, you know, originally you thought you were going to bring in $222 million worth of revenue, but you actually brought in $235 million. Your expenses, you were thinking $222 million, but you brought in $230 million. And the bottom line, you were expected to have a, you know, balanced budget, but you actually did a little better than that at $4.1 million to the bottom line. You're required by the state of Alaska to meet 70% instructional percentage. You're at 79% per year, so you far exceeded that requirement. Page 72 through 76 has your general fund expenditures in details, in detail from budget to actual. So these four pages, I always think they're good to look at to just see how you're, you can see all the details of your general fund budget and how you did, you know, compared to budget. As I stated earlier, you know, you had your, on the front pages, you had your general fund, Title I, capital projects, and all your smaller funds. Well, your smaller funds are listed on page 91 through 93. You know, the bigger ones there would be student transportation, $14.5 million of revenues. You actually spent $484,000 more revenue than expenses in that fund. You did have a little bit of fund balance, so... And the other one would be nutrition services. Nutrition services, $5.6 million of revenue, $6.1 million of expenses. So you spent $437,000 more in revenue than expenses in for nutrition or food services. Page 99 through 165 gives you a detail of all of your smaller funds, budget to actuals. So you can see how you've done, if there's any in particular funds of special interest. You're allowed by the state of Alaska to maintain a fund balance of up to 10% of your total expenditures. And your fund, it's called fund balance subject to a limitation. There's fund balance with a couple of deductions that you're allowed to take. You can take those deductions. You're allowed up to a 10%. So you're at $6.5 million of fund balance subject to limitation. Your expenditures were $230 million, so you're at $2.8 million. Well, so as of this year, you would have been allowed $23 million of fund balance if was your total that you're allowed. So that's a good goal. Then on top of auditing the financial statements, we also have to audit your compliance with your grants and regulations and regulations with federal and state rules. And page 23. 232 through 234 list all of the federal grants that your business department and your school district are administering. Page 238 lists all of your state grants. Page 239 through 240 summarizes the opinions that we've given on all of these audit requirements. In our opinion, there was no findings, no non-compliance with your federal or state grants, and no question cost. So again, a clean opinion on all of the compliance-related items that we're required to test. So good job to management and everybody involved there. Just a little bit of statistical information. From 2003 to 2013, 44% increase. Now this information all comes from your statistical section in your CAFR. There's a statistical section back there. 44% increase in population in the borough. 27% increase in school enrollment over that 10 years. School employees, 12% increase. Average teacher salary, 31% increase from 51,800.
Be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. To $67,300 average teacher salary. That's from page 206 of your paper. Total revenues, 114% increase. Total expenditures, 111% increase. Total expenses per student from $9,432 to $15,649. General fund revenues increased 134%. Expenditures 125% over that same period. Workers' comp claims expense are all over the board. This is the fund balance that you're allowed to maintain. What's state of Alaska? So a big jump there in 2013. Bill appropriations have increased 62% over that period from 30 million to 48.8 million. Bill appropriation per student, it's up about $600 per student over the 10 years. Now this is the lapse. This is the money that you're giving back to the borough at the end of the year. As you know, there's a lapse provision that so much of the fund balance left over reverts back to the borough. It changed in 2013 that you're allowed to keep 75% of the increase. So I actually took the liberty of adding that up, and I think it was $8.5 million over 10 years lapsed back to the borough. Student transportation at a 50% increase. In those 10 years, per student, just 18%. Food service, 82% increase in the cost of feeding the kids in the last 10 years. We received $19 million of federal funding, $198 million of state funding. Again, there were no findings, no question costs, and unmodified opinions on compliance. That's it.
Are there any questions for members of the board? Member Rutherford?
Thank you. A couple quick questions. On page 59, it shows the annual leave accrued.
Annual accrued leave, yes.
Mm-hmm. At 5 million, up a little bit, up about 200,000 this year. I was just wondering.
Is it here or on here?
Yeah, in the big one.
Oh,
in the
okay.
big one, yeah.
Yes.
It's just a note. Okay. Is there an industry norm for annual leave carryover? And, you know, would you put up a red flag if it was getting too big? That liability was getting too big?
Yeah, but that's a great question, actually. You know, industry norm, I don't know. I mean, everybody always caps it, that you're allowed to carry over a certain amount. I don't remember exactly what your policy. You don't have a cap?
Through the president, one of our negotiated contracts caps it, and one does not cap it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, most everybody that I know has a cap, where you're only allowed to carry over so much. You know, that helps limit potential exposure in the future. You know, you pay it out over the years. So, I mean, I think that's a very good policy to have, is the cap. But what the limit is, I mean, I see a lot of entities that are about 4 weeks on the high end, 4 weeks of carryover. I don't know where you're at, but I see that a lot. But I don't know if there's really an industry standard. I've never heard of an industry standard. That's just what I see. And as far as the dollar amount, what was it again? I didn't.
Over
5 million. Over 5 million. Yeah, for as big as you are, it's not alarming. I don't believe. No.
Go ahead, Member Rutherford. I'm not sure who this one's for, but that $15,639 per student amount, does that include the on behalf of that big chunk of money the state? For retirement.
Yeah, I believe this year we used to take that out on this slide, but we stopped doing it because we're at the point now where almost all the years have it in there, so we left it in there. So, yes.
For comparison.
Yes, it's included in there, yeah.
to make a comment. That's okay. One of the things that I found helpful when I was reviewing the budget online prior to getting on the board was looking at the 30,000-foot level overview of the budget in the Budget 101 guide that's posted online. So, you know, if anybody who's like a non-financial person would like a good general overview of how to digest what's in the budget, I would recommend that. Thank you.
Are there any other questions, comments from the board? All right, Dr. Promo.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that is it for administrative reports, Madam President.
All right, so we'll move to borough and city reports. City of Palmer, please.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board, Superintendent Promo, Doug Griffin, City Manager for the City of Palmer. Just a couple quick announcements. I know you have a big agenda. We have hired a new airport superintendent for the City of Palmer. He starts on Monday, so we'll have someone specifically assigned to operating the Palmer Municipal Airport. His name is Jeff Combs. So he's a Valley guy, and so we are looking forward to his starting and providing some more energy at the airport. The other thing is just a couple of events that we have planned in March. One is a fundraiser that the city is sponsoring at the depot for the great, it's called the Great Train Music Event. It's a fundraiser to try to come up with some money to, again, restore the tracks and the rail bed to bring train service, passenger train service back to Palmer. And then we are, the city again is playing host in conjunction with the governor's office with his Choose Respect March. It culminates at the depot. It's scheduled for March 27th. So put that on your calendar for this year's version of Governor Parnell's Choose Respect March and, to bring up awareness for the problem of domestic violence and sexual abuse. So with that, thank you for your time. Bye.
Thank you. We will move on now to our Student Advisory Board representative report, Ms. Williams.
The Student Advisory Board has met once since the last meeting. We discussed a lot of things that the school board is discussing, and we had two of our school board members there with us, Member Walton and Member Ray. And we had great discussion about the credit increase and about some of the issues that the board's going over. One great thing that's happening for Student Advisory Board is that next week we're actually having a joint meeting with the Anchorage Student Advisory Board. I know all of you guys are invited and completely welcome to come. We would love to see your faces there. And then it's actually an event that our Student Advisory Board has been pushing for 2-3 years now, and so we're really happy to see this finally happening. And then our next meeting is on the 27th of February, and I can send out more details nine to noon at Colony High School. Also, good news for Student Advisory Board. My junior rep had to resign. She had an emergency medical issue in her family. And we have a new junior rep. It's Rebecca Farley from Colony High School, and she will be sitting on our curriculum council. So we're really happy to have her on the executive board. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Dr. Promo.
Thank you, Madam President. For the superintendent update, I'm handing out some information about February 5th, which is today, and it is the State of Alaska Executive Proclamation by Governor Sean Parnell, and he declared that today, February 5th, is the first digital learning day in the State of Alaska, and so to inform the board and provide some information about us. okay, and is some information, and this is really about the movement that they're making with fiber and online learning, but certainly in our district, digital learning is a lot more. But to provide you some information on one of the funds, the Mat-Su iTech is an added value program for Mat-Su Borough School District. It just offers course flexibility and choice to students in their schools and around the district. We do this, the site-based APEX, where teachers can use the curriculum in their classrooms as well as district-wide so that students around the district can enroll in iTech courses as part of their schedule. The rich curriculum affords students the option for credit recovery if they need to make up a course, course enhancement, or program acceleration. It allows students in our rural locations to have the same opportunity as students in urban schools. Many sites within Mat-Su have cyber centers, a place where students enrolled in an online course work for one or more periods during the day. To build the success, we train district personnel. Site coordinators and mentors are trained to support students at the site level, and then highly qualified teachers within the district are trained to serve as virtual teachers. Other teachers are trained per request to use the curriculum in a blended model in or a tutoring setting or for AP preparation right within their classrooms every day. So with that, on the back of the proclamation is some information about your digital learning. However, some students at Colony Middle School wanted to show you a little bit more about what is happening digitally in the Mat-Su Borough School District. And he proclaimed this just last week, and I brought it to folks to say, what can we show? And these Colony Middle School students and their teachers turned around and did this within 24 hours.
Welcome to a special news report by the CMS News Team. I'm Mariah, and with me is Bradley.
February 5th, 2014. That's today. It has been proclaimed by Governor Sean Parnell as Digital Learning Day. We're here to show you exactly what Digital Learning Day looks like in the Mat-Su Borough School District.
To start our report, we now join our superintendent, Dr. Paramo.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dina Paramo, the superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District, your school district. I'm here today to celebrate and to talk to you about Digital Learning Day, February 5th. Our governor, Governor Parnell, proclaimed February 5th as Digital Learning Day, and we're going to learn a little bit about it. Here with me today, I have a student, Sterling Maffey. Sterling, can you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm a senior at Palmer High School. I've been working for the district for about 3 years now under Mr. Michaud here, our Director of Information Technology.
All right. And you did some pretty fantastic things, and what we're showing today is an app that you designed for our school district. Tell me a little bit about that and how that went about.
Sure. It's basically the end product is a centralized communication center where we can send out and give information to all of our stakeholders and students and staff about news in the district through all different sorts of mediums of sharing through social networking and whatnot. And Justin here came and asked me to look into it, to design it, and we went through the process, and we just had it released last summer.
And so with this app, you get the first point of information. And so on those snow days and cancellations, if you have the Mat-Su app, you would be the first to know. Mr. Misha, what do you have to say about Digital Learning Day?
Well, digital learning is everywhere, and this is one of the wonderful things we've done with technology in the district. You're about to learn more of what we've done for digital learning in the Mat-Su.
Thank you, and happy Digital Learning Day.
Thank you, Dr. Paramo. While I was watching that clip, I downloaded Sterling's new app. It's pretty impressive for a high school student. I mean, look. There's Facebook, Twitter, photos, calendar, schools, videos of the Mat-Su Borough School District. It's pretty impressive.
Which, you know, that reminds me, did you know that we have 5 APEX cyber centers located at 5 different high schools?
Oh my, no.
Well, there's one at Colony High School, Career Tech High, Palmer High, Wasilla High, and Mat-Su Central.
So many highs. Well, but what does APEX stand for?
Well, APEX means, like, the highest point or summit.
Oh, I thought APEX was, like, an acronym for something.
I know, right? With so many acronyms in the digital world, you just come to expect it. Anyway, Here are some students at the Cyber Center at Pediatrix to tell us about this amazing digital learning experience. Because you can work at your own pace and in your own space. You can either use a laptop or a desktop.
Being in an APEX class is really helpful with learning because you can set your own pace.
Not just that, you can also be more structured in your learning.
And it also helps you get ready for more college-level classes because it's more in-depth and in detail.
I would say that I would rather take an APEX than normal classes.
Agreed.
Working in the APEX Center, which is really nice because it's big and I can go on my own pace and do my own thing. There's lots of focus here rather than at home. And if you're in need help, I have a teacher here who can always help me out if I need it.
Hi, I'm Heather Pelletier and I'm one of the APEX teachers at Palmer High.
APEX, what a great learning program. I can't wait to sign up for those APEX classes when I get to high school.
Same here. Students have even more opportunities to learn a digital environment at the Career and Technical High School. They recently participated in a gaming event called Arctic LAN.
Hey, that's an acronym for Local Area Network.
That's right. But it's just a play on words for them. These students spent 12 hours playing computer games, spending leaps and bounds in learnings. Check it out. I know I want to.
Hey, I'm going to go check that out.
Okay.
My name's Jason. I'm a senior. I go to CTHS, and I attended the Arctic LAN, which happened here on February 1st, last Saturday.
For the first time this year, we were able to get a high-speed fiber backbone to connect to the global internet and distribute that connection to endpoints using Layer 2 switches, a router, and a DHCP server.
I'm Shania. I also participated in Arctic LAN so that I could interact with people that had the same interests as me, such as video games and junk food. Most people think that video games make people violent and disconnected, but in this instance, it was able to help connect people as well as help our memory, fine motor skills, and our reflexes.
So, it looks like Bradley is checked out, but that's okay, because we just checked in. Hey! Hi!
Those high school players really get technical.
Mm-hmm.
That's way true.
Well, let's not forget about the opportunities middle school students have and get, especially those who participate in the ANSEP program.
Another acronym, and one that means Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program.
These students learn to build their own computers and even learn to troubleshoot.
Watch and learn. I'm going to be part of that soon.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just so excited. I get to build my own computer.
Oh, my gosh!
Today I was studying the processor and the heat sink and the
Hello, my name is Maddox. I fixed those two computers because positive people, the fans weren't turning on the Blu-ray and weren't connecting us right.
How did you figure out it was the connection?
Just looked at the instructions.
So you were just checking all the connections to make sure they were correct?
Yeah.
Excellent, Maddox. Thank you.
I was so impressed with Maddox. I mean, did you see him help that other student when he couldn't get his computer to work? And he went back and reread the directions and figured it out.
That was way impressive.
Our final report is about an elementary STEAM school called Cottonwood Creek. Here we go again with another acronym. This one stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, and Math. And at this school, the students get a lot of learning out of their iPad.
Hey,
you're in the struggle. Who am I saying?
I went to Cottonwood Creek. Oh, hi, guys. Well, I went to Cottonwood Creek, too, but I never was there when the STEAM program was started, so I've never got an iPad.
That's so sad. It's okay. You're at Collier now. You can use this one because sharing is caring, and we all have fun.
Oh, yes. While I was on vacation in Hawaii, I was still able to participate with my Battle of the Books team because I learned how to use Edmodo at Cottonwood Creek Elementary School on the iPads.
I've been able to communicate with my teachers and turn in my work using Gaggle on my iPad.
Well, then I just want to sign you guys on Tuesday.
Yes. Okay.
Good afternoon, Catwood Great Cougars. This is Mrs. Barbalo coming to you today on the CCN News.
Our theme of the month is celebrating American diversity. And our word of the week is tolerance. An example is, in the practice of tolerance, one's enemy is the best teacher, said by Dalai Lama. Salem?
Thanks, Jace. That is the Winter Art Fair. It's from 6:30 to 8. It's $5 per child and up to 10 different crafts. Join us for a fun-filled art evening.
What an incredible tool those iPads are.
Oh, yeah.
And those fifth graders are amazing anchors.
They'll be great additions to our CMS News team.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that before we got our awesome computer and video camera at CMS, we were producing news with an iPad as well?
I'm glad to see we're always advancing.
This has been another production of CMS News.
Bye!
So that's just a sneak peek of just when you ask kids to show off what they can do. They found out about this yesterday morning, and they delivered it this morning. So we're quite proud, and on the bottom of the proclamation, and we have it up here, it asks, there's a website to upload, and these students uploaded their work right to Governor Parnell's website. So we hope that they can show their talents. But we're proud of that, and we request additional funds for our online learning so that we can just advance and kids can advance, and we appreciate that. So that's just a small update, and now the big news is the budget, of course.
One quick question. I was reading in the paper, and I don't know, today and yesterday, and I looked online that the federal administration is looking at $2.5 million for online learning for all the states. Are we part of that?
I'm not sure of that, but there is quite a bit out there in grants. And currently, of interest to us, there's $5 million right in our own state for which we can seek grants for, and we do have a team competing for some of that money to offer online learning, to offer what we have here that works for us, to teach their teachers and train their teachers the blended learning in Bush, Alaska. And so there's some money being offered, and we're writing a grant currently to be a platform for that to help Bush communities. And so that's one of it. And there's also a bill for which we testified this morning that our state is getting funds to help pay for E-rate, and it would be the E-rate match. And currently our district pays 40% of the cost for the Internet services and the data movement, and that equates $600,000. And so it means a lot more money. Well, actually, not more money, but more of a percentage of money in Bush, Alaska. However, it really does help the whole state, and $600,000 to us helps us meet our bottom line, and we're willing to do that. So we testified this morning. So I can't comment on the federal monies, but there's certainly state-generated monies as well, and they may be tied together. Okay, and at this time I'd like to introduce Luke Fulp, the Assistant Superintendent for Business and Operations, and he has a budget update. At our next budget meeting, each one of you will receive a large three-ring binder. We're sharing with you what we have thus far. Budgeting in schools has been all over the news lately, and we've taken the approach of over the last few years of sharing the information, knowing that there's a long session ahead of us, as well as a long discussion in our own assembly chambers in regard to school funding. And we keep a positive outlook, but it is our responsibility to demonstrate to you, if we're on a path without additional assistance, what our deficit looks like. Just if everyone can understand that a budget is a plan based on your best information. And we will share what we know in money that is already present in the BSA, in energy, and what we believe the assembly will pitch in. But currently there are some bills out, and so we will share just some anecdotal information about what that may look like. You heard this morning that we did build a fund balance, and we were able to do this by going to our assembly, and it took many, many years to articulate to them that the funds that we have left over, it's good business practices to keep funds in the district so that in emergencies or if there is shortfalls that we can soften that blow over time with funds. And, again, budgets are made on predictions of enrollment. The majority of our money comes from student enrollment, and we turned in already for FY15 to create our budget to the state on November 5th. We had to turn in next year's enrollment to create our budget, while last year, remember, on May 19th is when we received the audit confirmation of how many kids we had in FY13 last year. So today we are living, well, we just closed out. It took us February 5th, we closed out FY13 budget. We're operating currently in FY14 budget, but predicting FY15. And so all the information that you're going to see is based on what we know from the state, how their metrics work, how their rules on predicting enrollment work, our new rules on carryover. We took a chance. Generally, at the end of the year, we move some money into helping schools and buying materials for classrooms so that it's not sent back to the borough, lapsed to the borough, because we had an ordinance that 50% of the funds were just reassumed by the borough. And many a times, those funds were more than the increase they gave us that year. It's based off of 75-25, and the reason is for that, that if you look at our budget, 75% of our budget is provided by the state of Alaska, approximately 24 by our borough, and about 1% by federal monies. And so we were able to work through good relations to say, let the state money stay with us in the district. And currently, and you'll see that, and you've just heard, we have about a $5 million unrestricted fund balance, and that is going to help us make ends meet it as the board moves forward in deciding. This is the first go-round, and you will see what the worst is, and we will also say what the best could be. I do not believe, and I would bet my next paycheck, the worst, we will not see the worst. And I've been in this job for 3 years now, and I'm confident that we will not see the worst. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Promo, President Pauscher, members of the board, Luke Fulp, Assistant Superintendent of Business and Operations, and as Dr. Promo mentioned, we're just going to go through the budget process explanation at this point as we know it. We'll be presenting a worst-case scenario, more or less, and again, want to remind the board of those key dates, November 5th date where we our projected enrollment was due to the state. At the end of March, we'll be required to transmit the budget to the borough, and that will be a preliminary budget. It's required to be balanced at that point, so we will have to make some, we'll have to figure out how to balance it between now and then. And during April, the state legislature adjourns, but also the borough sets that minimum required amount as per state statute. They have 30 days to do so after we transmit the budget. And then sometime between May and June, they will provide an additional allowable after their budget deliberations and have set their budget. What we have for preliminary budget thus far is simply a rollover budget. It includes all of the FTEs that we full-time equivalents and positions that we currently have within the district today, and we rolled them forward, both certificated and non-certificated. What this resulted in was simply movement on the salary schedule. No salary schedule increases for any employee group. So whether taking the individual where they were at on the salary schedule, if they were eligible for movement, step placement on the salary schedule, they moved forward a step. If they were not eligible, they did not. And that's really what happened. The ratios and metrics that we utilized, of course, by maintaining the same staffing, we were able to maintain and a limited enrollment growth of 114 students. We maintain the same ratios, so you can see them here, but they're the same that we are currently operating under for pupil-teacher ratios and specialists at the elementary level. And then for metrics, we utilize the same metrics that we currently have for these different categories, and that's how we came up with our expense, total expense for the expense side of the budget. What we eventually came to was a budget deficit of $7.3 million. You can see it here. I have the two columns. The first column is just the FY14 budget as it's been revised, the latest revision that the board approved, the winter revision in December. And then next to it is the FY15 projection. You can look down the line and see that we see a little increase in federal revenue, mainly due to E-rate increases. There's not a substantial increase in state foundation, although we have 114 additional students. I'll explain that in a bit here. State energy relief, that's maintained, and that's $100 multiplied by the adjusted average daily membership for the students that we serve. The student safety security money, that was one-time money that was introduced for FY14. Our assumption at this point is that goes away. We haven't heard and have no indication that that will continue in any fashion. And borough support, we are projecting a 3% increase. So may be presumptive, but it is what we have laid out in the past as far as a goal and a plan for achieving that goal. Also get a little bit more into that with details. But more or less, the on-behalf portion is both in the revenue side, and it's down below under the expenses, so that's a wash. And altogether, we have a $7.3 million deficit. Would you like to say?
Just when you notice the $1.3 million in use of unassigned fund balance, that was, we used funds for positions, and that's why we had to adjust our budget. When we had school requests where classrooms were too large or special education requests for additional services, either for paraprofessionals or teachers, we evaluated those and added those because when we are audited, we believe we will have those numbers, and they would set. So then the money would come in that would then be carried over until next year. So we did use the fund balance to cover those. They were not originally budgeted, but they were warranted.
Moving forward, the contributing factors, and Member Larson.
Through the President, thank you. Just real quick, the state energy relief money at this period, we've asked for more money in a different area for one-time money, is that correct, in our budget?
Through the President, Member Larson, yes. What we asked at what was in a legislative priority, the board's legislative priority, was one-time funding for health insurance relief. So non-recurring one-time money, but that would really take the place of what's you see there as a gap in the budget.
And the built-in borough 3% that we're asking, are we really sure that the borough is going to grant that 3% increase?
Through the President, when you see next slide, we share the data of the other large four school districts, which are Juneau, Anchorage, Kenai, and Fairbanks. And the last 3 years for which we have requested, the borough has additionally done this, and you'll see the rate. We have requested, and we have told them last year, we're going to come back to you and always ask for 3%, which is 1.5% over their own cap. They have a 1.5% increase in their own budget. Until we are in between Anchorage and Fairbanks, that's where we believe that our funding should reside per student. That's where we reside in size. And you'll notice that currently we are and losing the race of all five school districts. And so our goal is to gain local contribution per student, a meaningful increase. Of course, it would be unrealistic to ask for 10%. I don't think they can make that 10% adjustment, but a 3% increase each year is appropriate, we believe, and accurate to get where we need to go.
Continuing on, we have the contributing factors that got us to the deficit, really, and this isn't in no ways a P&L or a balance, you know, something that would be recognized by CPA, but it shows you as a, you know, official statement or financial statement, but it really does show you kind of what changed in the budget from last year to this year that got us to a $7.3 million deficit. The first thing is obviously the school safety and security funds went away, so that was $2.5 million. And then we also had a reduction in state aid due to an increased tax valuation. So I want to remind the board that the local required contribution is 2.65 mils of the full and true value tax determination as determined by the Department of Commerce. So as that portion increases, then the state says the borough is responsible for paying that, and we're going to reduce your basic need by the local contribution. So while you saw just a modest increase in state funding, it's because state aid really decreased by $600,000. And so we're asking for $1.5 million from the borough. $600,000 was paid by the state last year. Now the state's saying the borough has to pay that. So really the net increase that we're getting from the borough, if they do fund us at $1.5 million, is $900,000. It's pretty complicated, but it is a reality, and so I wanted to put it in there. Regular movement on the salary schedule for all employee groups, that was $2.1 million. Health insurance increase of 8%. Our portion, again, we split the increase 50-50, is $1.4 million. Mandatory benefits increase due to salaries, and that's all of the other benefits tied to salaries as a percentage that increase the budget by $400,000. And then other expenses throughout the budget that were smaller in nature were $300,000 for a total of $7.3 million. Member Larson.
Real quick, on the health insurance increase split, 8% went to employees. About what was that percentage-wise? You know, I know from, is it like 2%?
It's not a straight percent because we take the total premium, the total health cost, and we apply 8% to that to get the new estimated premium for the upcoming year. But the difference between our current premium and that new premium with 8% growth, we split the difference there and apply it. So it's not 4% to each group. It works out a little bit different as a percentage of what of who pays what, it's a much greater percentage to the employees when you look at the total amount paid by each. The difference I'm talking about. So I can't give you a direct percent, I'm sorry. Yeah, but I can give you, I can provide that in the Board Connect. I can follow up with you. Does that answer the questions?
This current year, we have budgeted in 8% last year, and it came in at 6%. The information we had was that a possible 10% increase, so we're pretty confident that 8% might be the real number.
Okay. And to clarify, same amount for each, the employee and the district, but as a percentage of who pays what, and we talked about this at the last board meeting, it increases the employee's portion pretty substantially over time. We're looking at next year with an 8% increase, the split, currently the split's 87.7% for the district, 12.3% for the employees. With an 8% increase, the employees will be paying 15% and the district will be paying 85%. That's with 8%.
So there actually is a 2% or 3% that the employee...
For the employees, it amounts to about 3%. So I could do the math. I'm sorry about that. Continuing on. Foundation formula, I won't run through all of it, but I did want to put the detail there. And, again, this is on the website, and the detail's there for anyone who wants to really delve into it. Again, as Dr. Promo mentioned, we will have the full packet at the next meeting, so there will be much, much more information at your fingertips. But this shows the recurring versus one-time money, and it's important for us to understand that as we go to Juneau and talk to our legislative delegation that we simply did not stop receiving money after 2011, and I think that's the point of this slide. You can see that the non-recurring one-time actually has continued. It's been apportioned as a pay-as-you-go or year-to-year, but you can see that the energy money has been in place ever since FY 2012, and then this past year we received safety and security on top of that. And each of those installments is about $25 million for the state's budget, but that's apportioned to all 53 school districts, of which the Matsu Borough School District gets about 8% of that.
And we wanted to show this, that green section then is the energy relief has already been placed for next year, which is FY15. The blue section may increase. There's a bill out there now, and we'll talk about that a little later. The energy relief is already in there. The red portion came out in December in the capital budget.
our problem, or not our problem, everybody's issue, and is that if that safety and security money goes away, we need it to increase by about that block again. It needs to reach up upwards, hit almost hitting that $140,000 bar. $140 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's why we're in the predicament. So once they gave one-time money, the next year your fixed costs just eat that up, and then, you know, we have about a $4 million deficit just for regular movement, just for regular cost and fixed cost increase. And so we have to continue to look to replace that $4 million each year. But I'd like the board to know that at this point in time last year, we said, you know, it might be 45 staff members. When the session was over, they provided that safety money, which went into our general fund, and we used it for things that we already spent on safety, which freed up money to have money for to keep our staffing. And we're looking for that again. So we're looking for increase in BSA, the energy relief, and that's why we're asking again for another $25 million, possibly for insurance. To assist with insurance. And so that's why we keep that, because what's out there now for the BSA increase would only keep us where we were this year. But as you see, it needs to increase that much again next year.
The BSA, the blue, is really represented by foundation formula funding. And in the next slide here, as Dr. Bramo alluded
Luke,
to.
Yeah. Can I interrupt you just
Absolutely.
For a minute? Go ahead.
Mr. Polk, could you go back to that slide? The safety and security money, remind me, did we add employees with that money, or was that really infrastructure, materials, things like that?
Dr. Promo can answer this question just as well as I can, so I'll take a shot at it. We had already been investing quite heavily in safety and security throughout the district. We have a number of projects, infrastructure related, of course, with our safety security cameras, enhancements to our lockdown buttons, panic buttons, you name it. We dedicate some funds to football helmets, but it really was discretionary and helped us balance our budget, but I'll let Dr. Promo answer that.
Correct. We have monitors are set up in lunchrooms for safety. We have safety officers at all of our high schools. So any function that we had in the district that related to safety, these funds could cover that FTE, which left open FTE generally, but there was no reporting on it. There wasn't. And then we use data because of the security cameras. We were able to reap the money that we already used for the data and the security in IT. We could pay for that. And so basically we moved the money. It's all really in one pot, but we were able to articulate back to them that we have safety and security already in our district, and we're going to use some of that on what we already pay. So that, and that was our goal, to retain teachers and other staff. And but we also, on any item, we did a review of safety. We had already, our district and our community had already passed a safety and security bond of $19 million a few years ago. So we have some funds, and there are still some funds left in that account at the borough. And so we were kind of ahead of the rest of the districts, if you will, in some of those items. And so we were able to adjust. We did mention helmets. If you look at our biggest student injury, it comes in football. And with the litigation that's out there, we spent some money on student safety as well, directly, not for just facility, but for sporting events. We purchased mats for gyms along the side where students were getting injured, as well as helmets.
Two-way radios.
Two-way radios, yeah.
And we're currently renovating the Houston Middle School front entrance.
Correct. And that front entrance was for, if you've ever been to Houston Middle, there isn't an adult or anyone viewing the front of the building when people enter. So we renovated that. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that the money, the safety money, we use that, but it freed up money in our general fund. The general fund allowed us to put teachers and keep people in the classroom.
Correct. So we did not lay off 45 people, which is at this time is what we said last year. We use it very creatively in had the approval of the legislature in doing so, and EED. Every time we purchase, we had the approval.
Just one more. Last year, we in our budget had 45 staff layoff because we had to approve the contracts at this time, right? As the contracts for teacher contracts and CEA contracts are put off later now, is that correct? So we don't have to put that in the budget?
Member Larson, the contracts were placed off for tenured teachers, but at our next meeting, I am going to recommend that tenure contracts be approved. Just because we can do it doesn't mean we want to. Knowing that there's already information about the BSA, we're closer than we were last year at this point. They do look to increase the BSA by approximately $85 in the governor's bill right now. And I do not believe with the information around the state that that's going to get any less. We're going to push to actually have that be more. But we are in a better position currently because some money was added into or proposed. It's a long session, but proposed. And so though we've projected a potential deficit for the coming year, I'll be recommending to the board approve reemployment of all tenured teachers, non-tenured special education teachers, and non-tenured related service providers in good standing at the next meeting, February 19th. Although the legislature passed that legislation to extend reemployment, you're absolutely correct, Member Larson, from May 15th to March, or to May from March, we can confidently assure the employment for these groups and see no reason to wait simply because we can. In recognition of our projected deficit, we'll be evaluating the staffing plan and needs of the district and bring forward for reemployment of non-tenured teachers as we get more information. And as soon as we are assured that all the positions are supported in the budget, then all of those. But our district's success and innovation is really accomplished through teachers. We are a people organization, teachers, staff, leadership. We're a bunch of people doing the work. And so we want to be sure that we can move into the next year without as much fear as is happening elsewhere. And it's our desire to recommend reemployment of non-tenured teachers as expeditiously as possible when we have those final amounts. And so while we can, it would be my recommendation to actually do it sooner so we can move that and just concentrate on the positions for which when we work with principals might not have positions. But at this point in time, Mr. Phelps will finish with the presentation and you will actually see the amount that we have.
And thank you. And do want to mention that just as the board recalls last year at the end of March, that 45 FTE cut was temporary, as Dr. Paroma mentioned. And we learned more in April, of course, as well as the borough coming forward with additional 3% to help us retain those positions. The foundation formula, I think the basic thing here, you can do the math yourself, but we started with 17,594. That's our projected enrollment. That's approximately 114 FTE or average daily membership weighted student attendance at our schools. That's about 114 over what we currently have. And then through the school size adjustments, all the different factors, it equates to about 30,000 in total average adjusted average daily membership, and that's what we're funded off of is 30,000. So if you just think of that the formula as modifying our enrollment, that's really what it does. It takes it from 17,500 to 30,000.
And he noted to me that the math works out when they provide money in the BSA or through energy or through safety, they actually use the adjusted ADM to disperse it. And so at 30,000 students, it would be about $3 million, just so you can keep that. So when we receive currently in the governor's budget that he placed forward and the education bill, he suggested an $85 increase, which to MATSU is $2.5 million.
The continuation of the state foundation formula, you can see that 30,000 up at the top there. You apply the base student allocation. That's at 5,680. As Dr. Paramo mentioned, there's current legislation out there that's being considered for $85 increase to that. We did not include that in the budget at this point. So the basic need is $170 million, and then the minimum required local contribution went up to 25.9, and that's what I referred to earlier, is that did go up based on the full and true tax valuation as determined by the Department of Commerce. So state aid, as we're predicting at this point for the foundation formula, is $144.7 million. Tack on a quality schools grant that's 16 times the adjusted ADM, so another factor that uses the adjusted average daily membership of 30,000, and it gives us $480,000 for a total foundation formula funding of $145.2 million. And you can see that with the 17,594 students, that equates to about $8,200 per student. Of course, that's different than what Eric Campbell presented earlier, because it doesn't include on behalf. He presented a number closer to $15,000. Local contribution, what we have here is there's two ways. You have to start with the minimum required. It's the lesser of the two. And I wanted to show this because this tax base, this is what we're referring to. It's 9.8 billion, and it went up about 500 million from last year. So if you take 2.65 mils off of that, we are incurring the full growth now. There used to be a provision where it was just half the growth. Now it's the full growth at 2.65 mils. So the minimum required by them is 25.9. So that's now, that is funding that the state will not include in their basic need, and they're requiring the borough to bear that, and that has increased. So that takes away from the increase that we would see from the borough, because it's really a shell game at that point. And then the other option there is for those boroughs and municipalities that have very high tax base, namely North Slope Borough and Valdez. I'll move through this a little quicker here. I know it's a lot of math. And then calculation for the maximum is just the greater of the two. We use B, 23% of the basic need, and so you can see there that the minimum required plus the 23% of basic need gives us $65.2 million. That's the point I wanted to get there, is that the borough can give us up to $65.2. We are not requesting that. We're requesting a 3% increase over last year. And again, to reiterate, the goal is to get on a per-pupil basis, because we have had substantial growth in other districts' enrollment changes over time. We really need to compare this on a per-pupil basis, and you can see that out of the Big Five, we are the lowest. We're at 2,962 per pupil when you just look at the Mat-Su Borough's funding of our student enrollment, and we want to get between the midpoint of Anchorage, which is at 4,150, and that was Anchorage, and Fairbanks is at 3,545. So we want to get up between the middle, midpoint between those two districts, to continue to provide the quality education that we do today. Long-term forecast, the group's seen this many times. This has just been updated to include the enrollment projection, as well as the different assumptions when it comes to foundation formula. I think the biggest thing that we want to point out is that we, at this point, are including 100% of the intensive students that we're serving today. Last year, as you recall, for those members who were on the board last year, we were budgeting, at this point last year, 90% of those students, because there was so much scrutiny and auditing over our submittal of those intensive students by the state. And we were told at the very end of the school year last year whether we were funded on them or not, and it just became this a little bit unpredictable in a sense of knowing where the state would go. And without a adequate fund balance, we were left to create some sort of buffer in our budget by reducing the revenue projection. Now that we do have fund balance of some extent, we are budgeting 100% of those students, and so that's new. Other than that, we've covered most of these. On the expense side, it's really the same thing with certificated, non-certificated. It doesn't include any salary schedule increases. It's really what we refer to as dynamic status quo, where folks move through the salary schedules, but there's no salary schedule increase on top of that. And then we project an 8% increase over the long range as well. You can see that we are at 7.3 for the upcoming year. That grows to 9.8 in FY16. FY17 is 13.2. And then in FY18, it's a four-year projection here, $17.9 million deficit. So it continues to grow. Again, this $5.2 million that we have in unreserved unassigned fund balance, really a case can be made that we need every penny of that for future budgets, and it's pretty clear to see here. Another depiction of that information right here where you can see the structural deficit that exists between the continued growth in expenses, a pretty straight-line growth, and then evening off of revenue without further adjustments to the foundation formula.
And just to finish up, if the current, which we shared, and there's been information, the Governor Parnell put in an increase in the DSA for next year would equate to $85. That would be $2.5 million. So if you take that off of the 7.2, we're about the same amount as our fund balance. And that's given if nothing else changes. And we know that we don't want to spend it all down, but we aren't in a panic mode of saying we have to lay this off, that off. But we're also going into negotiations, too, and there's an expectation that things will change. And so this is just the reality of we are close, but if our expenses increase, then we're – and we could use fund balance. So it's just we know the pot of money, and we just have to decide how to spend it.
And Dr. Promo, if I may – I'd like to take the liberty, given the earlier presentation by our audit firm, where Member Rutherford asked that very astute question as to long-term liabilities and really the accrued leave that is owed to employees, and whether or not that was a large amount for our organization. And as I just want to point out to the school board that the $5.1 million that we owe in leave currently to our employees is roughly the same amount as what we have in unreserved fund balance. So it would be my professional opinion that that is a very high amount.
Right. Sure. And the teachers, what is their maximum? If you're certified, I mean.
I don't have that information.
I mean, we can't carry over year to year, but the MSEA contract is capped, but CEA is not. So that when I referenced to those were the difference. And our largest pool of people are teachers, or certified people, administrators, nurses, teachers. Member Larson?
Your structural deficit slide that shows the structural, and on this slide here, your major cost drivers or your major liability that causes that deficit, because our costs are about the same, or our income's the same. What's the major cost driver? Is it health insurance? Is it inflation? Is it steps increases? What's the major cost driver for that deficit that you are projecting out for the next 3 years?
That's a very good question, Member Larson. The major cost driver is what I pointed out really here in the contributing factors. You can see that just under the two top items, regular movement on the salary schedule for all employees is about $2.1 million, and then you tack on health insurance increases of $1.4 million, and then again, the mandatory benefits that increase with salaries is $0.4 million. So you're looking at about $4 million annually with just the movement through the salary schedules. That's no salary schedule increase, and that's $4 million right there. That would be the major cost driver right there.
One last question. In this contributing factor, I guess what I'm getting at is not just this year, but it's continuous.
Yes, this is
year after year, unless we get more income in. This is the major cost driver for that structural deficit.
That's correct. And the structural deficit does not just project a flat line of revenue increases. It does project a 3% increase from the borough every year, and it also projects increased student enrollment, so that would increase our state aid as well. So while no factor teachers, or the base student allocation is not increasing with our long-term projection. The enrollment is, as well as local funding.
All right. Member Walton.
Just a hypothetical out there. We haven't had an increase in the base student allocation over the last 3-4 years. Is there a number that we have missed out each year if we were, as it was thought, that we would receive $100 per student each year would be inflation-proofing and things like this for the base student allocation? What is the amount of money that we should be at, I mean, with that? What can you give me? I mean, I can get out my form and do a calculation, but I just, do you have any figures?
Through the President, Member Welton, I can get that to you pretty fairly easily. What we did want to do is present that there have been increases here to be, you know, very, you know, show everyone that we have received this money and it has been discretionary general fund money. But if that were to increase, I do know that haven't seen a bill on it yet, but I have read the article where Senator Berta Gardner is considering 404 on the base student allocation. And I think that her argument there is that it accounts for this time period where it was flat. Although we did receive one-time money during that time period, she's at least the article alluded to $404 on the base student allocation, and then every year after it would follow the increased CPIU.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions from members of the board? All right. Thank you, Mr. Fulp.
Thank you.
Dr. Pommel. That concludes the superintendent update. Thank you. All right. I'm going to ask for a 5-minute break. We're going to take 5 and be back.
All right, Chair.
In 5 minutes, what do you want?
Okay, so 5 minutes was 7 minutes. I should just say 10. All right, so we're going to move on with the consent agenda.
I move to approve the consent agenda, which consists of A, the minutes January 15th, 2014.
I second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, those pass, I'm sorry. We're moving right on to action items.
I move 14-058 elementary school, 35% design approval.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there anybody in the public who would like to speak on the design for Denina Elementary School? And we had quite an extensive report last time, but are there any questions from the school board on the Denina design? Member Larson.
Yeah, I asked a question about the efficiency of Marquantat, because Marquantat was used as the school for this elementary school, and I appreciate the answers that I got on the Board Connect 2 or 3 times, and the design change that this school took as a suggestion from the Marquantat about movement and about placement of different things. And the amount of work that was done there, that satisfied that question, and I appreciate the material that I received on that. Thank you.
All right, are there any other questions or comments from the board on Denina 35% design approval? All right. Is there any objection to passing the 35% design approval? Seeing no objection, that passes.
I move item B14-050, the reading of Board Policy 5144.1, Student Rights and Responsibilities.
Second.
It's
been moved and seconded. Is there anybody in the public who would like to speak on this item? Seeing no comments from the public, we did have a discussion last meeting. Is there any questions from the school board to administration concerning this?
Yes.
Member Welton.
Was there consideration about the e-cigarettes?
The electronic cigarettes?
Yes.
Mr. Piku, if you could please come forward.
Through the chair, the e-cigarettes will be added and considered in a TAD violation.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Does any member of the school board object to passing the 14050 student rights and responsibilities? Seeing no objection, that also passes.
I move 14-053, second reading, English language. Oh, no, excuse me. 14-052. Second reading, school-sponsored trips.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on school-sponsored trips? Is there any questions for the board to administration? All right, seeing no questions, is there any objection to passing BP6153, school-sponsored trips. Seeing no objection, that also passes.
I move 14-53, second reading of BP6174, English Language Learner Education.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on this? Are there any questions from the board to administration? Any member of the board who would like to speak on this item? Is there any objection from members of the board of passing? Okay, that also passes. Gosh, once we get started, we move pretty quick. All right, so that brings us down to item E.
I move item E, 14-054, the second reading of the board policy 6142.2, AIDS instruction.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there a member of the public who would like to speak to this? Are there any questions for members of the board to administration? Any discussion? Member Dearman.
I would just like to ask a question for clarification on this. I believe that at the last board meeting when this was brought up, I believe that Carly, our student representative, brought this up. And if we're taking this out as an entire single issue and this is being put in with all the other STDs and that information, AIDS instruction will be significantly taught during the time that it is conveyed to the students. Am I correct? It isn't something. My fear is that it will be perhaps glossed over and somehow the significance of it perhaps will be lost, and I think that this is an issue that is still so paramount in society that the conveyance of the importance of it needs to still have the strength and impact behind it, and I just want to be assured that that's going to still be there.
Through the chair, it will be. The language that was in the old policy was a lot of scare language,
mm-hmm.
and so we tried to include it to where it wasn't at the time when the epidemic first came to the public's awareness. There was a hype about the the subject.
Uh-huh.
And so we just tried to make the language more inclusive and to include in what's currently happening in practice in our schools. But no, it will still be considered a very significant issue.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, member. All right. Are there any, is there any discussion among board members? Member Williams.
I would just like to, I want the board to recognize the fact that right now we are seeing a rise in AIDS nationally, and our students are very concerned about that. We feel like even though language is outdated, that these types of board policies do put emphasis on protection of students. We saw this with TB, where we thought it was eradicated. Public awareness went away, and it's now back. That would be my concern and my thoughts on this.
Thank you. Any other members? Member Welton.
I'm teaching lifespan development at the local college, and just that the increase in the numbers of people with STDs, period, only we call them STIs now, you know, one out of five has herpes, and that's from teenage years on up. And so there's a huge, significant amount of information that needs to be given that parents don't have, and our schools are teaching that, and it's they're including all of the things. It does seem like maybe we were glossing it over, but it's in us, instead of setting it aside as something completely different, it's part of the whole thing of sexually transmitted infections.
All right, any other comments? Is there any objection to passing AIDS instruction, the removal of board policy? Seeing no objection, that also passes.
I'll bring forward item F, 14-055, Birch Tree Charter School Literacy Assessment.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there a member of the public who would like to speak on this matter? Seeing no member of the public, is there any board member who would who has questions for administration? Member Rutherford.
I had probably more of a realm of comment than question.
Okay. Are there any questions first? Seeing no questions, Member Rutherford.
I have a few comments. I did quite a bit of research on this item over the last few weeks. I wrote a letter to the board at the time this school was chartered in support of this school, and I have always supported this school's efforts, but I had real concerns about this request. And I researched the state guidelines, and I researched a little bit about the school's methodology, and I reached out and talked to some people. And well, I can't say that I would support them requesting a waiver from the state. I want to clarify that by allowing them to request this waiver, I don't want to go on record as endorsing that it really is the best thing for kids to endorse, to waive this assessment. This is assessment that the state requires. Everything that I saw, it's very, very short, very, very well supported by evidence that it is important in the process of being able to intervene when students are struggling. And while I know that Birch Tree's methodology is terrific for a lot of kids, we know that it might not be the right one for all kids. And we also know that we have this 30% mobility rate around schools, and students may start there and end up somewhere else. And parents and teachers need the tools to know whether or not their child needs intervention. And We heard from the principal last time that they do have intervention assessments in place. And so, you know, we need to trust that, that they want to do what's best for each student also. But I also acknowledge that I'm not an expert on early literacy. And the state does have experts on early literacy. And they decided that these little one-minute assessments are important enough to mandate them. I mean, we've been doing them for 8 years in the rest of the schools. So if they decided that, there must have been a reason. And I kind of wanted to suggest that the school actually only ask for a waiver of kindergarten assessment, because from what I saw, that was the one that's going to be the most difficult for them to implement with their current curriculum and methodology. But the bottom line is, I can, like I said, I can support them asking for the waiver, but I don't want them saying to Deeds, yeah, our school board thinks this is best that we waive this because they said okay. And all I'm saying okay to is go ahead and ask, but I don't know. I'm not the expert, and I'm not sure that it's what's best for students is to waive this. See the difference there?
I do. Any other school board members who'd like to speak on this? Member German.
Thank you. I would like to concur with Member Rutherford. I did, prior to the last school board meeting when this was on the agenda, I spent a considerable amount of time with Principal Busby, and we talked about this. And I remember being in kindergarten, and kindergarten was very much like kindergarten is at Birch Tree Charter now. And while I understand and respect that, still the teacher side of me understands how very important it is to assess a student's reading ability and work with them in reading as soon as possible and continue to do that as often as possible. And I would say that the one thing that helped me through my decision on this is that the principal did say that she, of course, if they're asking to receive this waiver is turned down, that of course they will comply and they will do everything that they can, but it's going to be extremely difficult given their philosophy and what they do. So that gives me some degree of comfort in knowing that they realize that this is probably, there's a greater chance of this coming than not. So the only thing I do hope is that if there are students who, for whatever reason, their parents decide to perhaps take them out of the school and put them somewhere else, that this information goes with the students so that if these students aren't on par with other students who have been being tested the same way other students in other schools have been, that the school administration will understand, the teachers will understand, and that these students will have the opportunity to catch up and hopefully by third grade be on par with their classmates. But I have to say that I agree with Member Rutherford again, and I will support them asking for this, but I don't know, that teacher side of me is not saying that maybe this is the best thing, but I do respect the fact that this is the way that this school is set up and run.
I do agree with the last two board members, and I won't talk too long to it, but this is one of our charter schools that we supported, and we supported the charter, and they came to us and asked us if, because they have to go through the school board to request this, and I say, yeah, I support them asking, but I also agree totally with the last two board members. Thank you.
Montessori school teacher, and it's similar to Birch Tree's philosophy. However, all of the data I've seen is that if children aren't on grade level by third grade, it's very difficult. Takes a lot of time, really takes a lot of effort to get them back up onto grade level. Birch Tree's asking that we don't test the children until third grade. I'm very concerned. I think that every child should learn to read and have the best start they can. So I won't be supporting this either. So with that, I would like to call for a vote. Member Scott?
Yes.
Member Michelson?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Dearman?
Yes.
And I'm voting no on this. I don't support sending it through. So that passes. We will recommend a waiver. Item G, please.
I move item G, 14-060, resolution 14-004, health insurance pooling.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Are there members of the public who would like to speak on this? Thank you. I think there's probably quite a few members of the public. No? Okay. If you do want to speak, it is 3 minutes, and we don't bring forward names of staff. Go ahead.
Everybody's instructed to be polite and kind.
Thank you.
That's all I said.
Okay.
Good evening. My name is Joe Boyle, and I'm president of the Matsu Education Association. MSEA is always looking for ways to keep down the cost of health insurance. For example, every few years, we request estimates from a variety of insurance carriers. We've never been offered a better deal. And we saved the district over $2 million when the administration and the classified employees joined the Health Trust in 2008. But I'm not here to talk about the benefits of the Health Trust. I'm here to explain why a resolution in favor of pooling and SB 90 is premature and not fiduciarily responsible at this time. First, please consider that the work that the Hay Group is not even finished. On Monday, the Senate Finance Committee approved a contract extension to June 30th, 2014, at an additional cost of $150,000, bringing the total paid to the Hay Group thus far to $450,027. SB 90 was introduced before the Hay Report was commissioned. Presumably, if SB 90 comes up for a vote, it will be amended to bring it in line with the Hay Report. Otherwise, $450,000 was spent for nothing. Second, many organizations have come out against SB 90. The State Chamber of Commerce doesn't support it. The Coalition for Choice in Health Benefits, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the Unalaska Borough and School District, the Ketchikan Borough and School District, and the Healthcare Management Corporation of Alaska, and Public Employees Local 71 are against SB 90. And presumably the school districts that have recently asked to join the trust are also against it. Bradner's Alaska Legislative Digest, a well-respected and widely read journal covering Alaska politics, also came out strongly opposed to SB 90. Mike and Jim Bradner are well-known business writers and not affiliated with the trust in any way. Finally, the actual costs of SB 90 are unknown at this time. On page 3, for example, SB 90 states, the school district shall reimburse the Department of Administration the cost of paying insurance claims for the first 4 months. Employees of school districts are covered by a policy of self-insurance. A lot can happen in 4 months. A premature birth with complications, a car accident involving multiple family members, or an employee requiring multiple organ transplants. All things that have occurred in this district, by the way. You could be on the hook literally for millions of dollars in claims. Or this. The Hay Report, the actual report, not the 20-page PowerPoint, gives a range of possible savings and possible losses. For example, according to the report, new plan designs and cost sharing could end up costing $38.9 million. If you and oh gosh, man, thank you. This resolution, you are agreeing to costs and liabilities unknown to you at this time, disagreeing with business-friendly organizations such as the Chamber of Commerce and the Alaska Legislative Digest, and agreeing to recommendations and policies that have not yet been written. Please delay this decision until you have all the facts. Thank you. One sentence. I'm happy to try to answer any questions, but Rhonda Kitter, the CFO of the Public Education Health Trust, is here tonight, and she knows more about insurance than anyone else I know. Thank you, and thank you for your extra time. Thank you.
Are there any other members?
Well, the last speaker just pretty much went through everything I put together. There are a few things that I think need to be addressed.
Excuse me, can you state your name for the record? We know you, but go ahead.
Chad Swarthout. As the last speaker led to, the Hay Group is claiming somewhere between a $31 million loss for the state or a $13 million gain. Those aren't good odds for any business plan. As a matter of fact, the pooling doesn't even have a business plan yet. I couldn't go to any one of you and ask for a loan and say, well, I may lose everything that you give me, or I may get back about 10%. There's nobody in their right mind that's going to do that. And if you cast your support for pooling at this point, there's no guarantee on how this is going to turn out. There's no basis for stating that we're going to actually save money. Currently, the CV plan that we're attempting to get to will save the district $1.6 million in the first year of implementation, and that's saving the 8% that Mr. Fulp is projecting that the insurance across the district is going to go up. We would save the district that amount. And that's an approximate. I wasn't part of the talk, so I only have approximations. And just to follow up, a grade 7, in accordance with the Hay Group suggesting that we implement for insurance, the total out-of-pocket could potentially be $13,000 for a catastrophic family accident. On a grade 7, step 2, which is many of our SPED assistants, that's two-thirds of their net income. That's a lot of money. That's bankruptcy. I can't support bankruptcy for several of our employees in a year. We keep insurance the same thing we keep car insurance for, and that's for the unthinkable. If the unthinkable happens, we need to be covered for it. We can't be putting our fellow employees, our fellow citizens, in such a position where they will be bankrupt and essentially be paying the state to work here. I see my time has expired. Thank you.
Are you testifying as a group or
yes,
an individual?
Yes, Madam President. My name is Jennifer Jones Molina, and I'm a second, third grade teacher at Wakatons Elementary School. And we're the Muskox, and like the Muskox, we all herd together. And so I have them here to show support for SB. First of all, I have letters from our buildings to each of the board members. Would it be possible to hand these to your secretary? And then, okay, thank you. So we are here to ask you to please not support SB 90. And as Joe eloquently spoke earlier, he gave a lot of good information about SB 90. SB 90 is really, if you look at the cost, our health trust, which the Public Education Health Trust, they have an administrative cost of only 3%.
And when you look at what the state of Alaska has at this time, which they have a 10% administrative cost. So it doesn't make sense to go with someone who has a higher percentage on their administrative costs. The other issue is we're concerned about losing benefits. It's not necessarily cheaper. It's just a matter of taking benefits away from us. And so we would really ask that you oppose and not support SB 90. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm a third grade teacher at Stowe Elementary. I've been a teacher in this valley for 15 years. And I'm here tonight to speak and ask you to consider what's been said before. And so I'm going to read my thoughts. In my class, I believe in student empowerment. I believe my students have the right to make choices. Each day, they're reminded of their choices by reciting our guidelines for success in our school. There are four guidelines. I will respect myself and others. I will come to school prepared to learn. I will be responsible for my choices and actions, and I will have the courage to do my best today. Yes, these are choices. Every day, my 8- and 9-year-old students are given the power to decide what works best for them within the parameters of these guidelines. They already understand the power that choice gives them. They can, therefore, control the direction of their day through the choices that they make. Because of this freedom, they're better equipped to make positive decisions, not only for themselves, but for others in their class. Just like my students, I thrive on the power of choice. We as Alaskans also know the power of choice, and we thrive on it. Choice allows us the freedom to be the individual that we are, within parameters of set rules and regulations. Last week, it was stated that we have too many choices of health care plans throughout the state, and that these choices were costing the state more than it could bear. The creators of SB 90 believe that if all choice is taken away, it won't be so bad. It would save the state money. It would still provide health insurance. It really wouldn't be such a negative thing. Right? I say, if all the choice is taken away, what positive can come from that? What freedom do we earn to make decisions for our lives? I'm asking that you not support SB 90 as it stands, but to consider simply narrowing the field of choices of plans available and then giving us, the members, the power to vote on which plans best suit our needs. That is truly the positive outcome that could happen should we be allowed to choose for ourselves. Thanks.
Madam President, Board, Dr. Perala, I'm Barb Morris, longtime special ed teacher at Wasilla High. I have to stand on my toes. That's bad. I know I can move now. I'm here to ask you to postpone or to vote no on support of Senate Bill 90. As a 2-time cancer survivor and the current MSCA Health Committee Chair, I understand the costs and the benefits of health insurance. In 1997, and I can't give the name because we can't give the name of staff, the then MSCA president, who is now one of your directors, moved our plan from the district's plan to the health trust. She did this with the school board's approval and support. For 17 years, we have had a plan that has repeatedly come in at lower renewal rates than the state and the nation. We've kept our management costs down to under 4, closer to 3%. I mean, it's been consistent and there for us for a very long time. Senate Bill 90 has the potential to greatly decrease the benefits and the stability of our plan. I believe that with decreased benefits, your ability to attract and retain quality employees is going to be diminished. Cost containment is vital. We as an association have been at every site this year talking about how we can contain costs for health insurance, both for the district and for ourselves. I do think this is something we are in jointly. Please do not support and give up local support and local control of our health insurance. Please vote no on supporting SB 90. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Ernie Kirby. I am the CEA president. SB 90 changes health insurance for school district employees in several different ways. Currently, the school district employees can choose whether or not they wish to have health insurance coverage through the school district. SB 90 would force all school district employees to be included in the state's economy health plan. SB 90 no longer allows school district employees to bargain health insurance. School boards and employees could no longer determine which health insurance options best fit their needs. The state could modify benefits without input or agreement from school boards or employees. This year, the state of Alaska changed from HealthSmart to Aetna, which severely changed the list of providers right here in the valley. SB 90 has mixed results. For the majority of school district employees, it would mean a decline in benefits and coverage. The economy plan does not have vision benefits and provides only $500 annually towards dental. Mandating all employees participate in the state health plan forces school districts to pay premiums for employees who previously opted out of insurance. These funds could be used in other places. Current plans, such as the Public Education Health Trust, carry the risk of premiums that do not actually cover the actual claims. As a self-insured plan, the state of Alaska is responsible for all claims, even if they are higher than what the premiums bring in. The Public Education Health Trust has been very successful in keeping annual increases of premiums lower than the national average and significantly lower in Alaska. The trust invests premium dollars and utilizes those earnings to further reduce premiums. Since 1996, the trust has averaged less than a 10% increase in premiums. Unlike the state's plan, which is inefficient, mainly the services are output for bid every 4 years, the Public Education Health Trust is consistently reviewing prescription drug costs, using investment returns to offset premium increases, investigating new ways to provide care at lower costs, and promoting preventative services in an effort to meet school districts' needs and financial responsibilities. Thank you for your time and effort, and I ask you to postpone at the minimum of passing this resolution. Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public who would like to speak on this issue? All right. We have had quite a few
few questions from the board, so I'd like to ask administration to come up and answer some questions for the board, please.
Sure. At this time, I'd like to request Catherine Gardner and Luke Fulp to come forward as needed. And I will just state that in the resolution, when it was written, I requested to follow the suggestion of the Hay Group, which the Hay Group did not suggest SB 90. So a lot of the testimony was to not support SB 90. This resolution supports pooling, and the Hay Group suggested pooling outside of the state of Alaska, but having all districts pool. And so this supports the actions of the Hay Group, not, I don't think SB 90 is listed on it. Because the Hay Group supported the pooling, but not necessarily at the state. The state currently runs all retired teachers and all retired PERS members already. So they do not only state health care, but they also do retirement health care. So at this time, I'd request that Luke Volk and maybe some of the questions that we had through the week be able to address, and then the board, or would you like them to be directly to the questions?
If you have a presentation, if you have some of the answers to the questions I know that came up over the week, we'd like to, you guys are looking at each other like you're not prepared for that. Yes? Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Fulp. All right. So, would you like us to ask the questions we had throughout the week, or would you like to go through the questions we had throughout the week?
Yes, President Powder, if you would just entertain the same questions that you had throughout the week. We don't have those with us at the moment.
Okay. So, members of the board, is anybody would anybody like to ask questions of Mr. Fulp and Ms. Gardner? Member Larson, please.
Some of the public testimony stated that the Hay Group isn't finished with their research, that they were granted extra money. I don't know this. I assure that I'm not discounting the testimony, but can you give a brief on, is that an ongoing research project for the Hay Group, or is it just a final report with additions that are going to come up?
Do you have any understanding? Okay. I just conferred with Ms. Katie Gardner, and we believe it's more or less keeps the firm on retainer to answer questions. And, for instance, next week the Hay Group will be conducting a teleconference with all school superintendents and business officials to answer questions and to know more details about the project. From our perspective and understanding, however, the Hay Group was commissioned to conduct this study. That was a scope of work outlined for this firm, and they have provided a report as of December 6th.
All right. Any questions from members? Member Michelson.
I've got a couple of questions, and the first one is, are there other school districts around the state that are entertaining similar resolutions to support pooling of health care, whether it's SB 90 or any other effort?
I'll defer that to Dr. Promo. She has worked with the Big Five superintendents and may know more about other school districts' plans to support such an effort.
Well, particularly asked about a resolution, and Kenai, who is actually self-insured and not part of anything, did a resolution. And basically, it's very similar to ours. I don't believe that they suggested SB 90. It's based on the Hay Group, and the Hay Group did not recommend SB 90 in the form that it was written. But Mrs. Gardner, in working with others, may know. I'm not aware of other boards that are taking action through a formal resolution. However, there were school districts and school boards last spring who submitted letters in support of SB 90. There were a number of them. I don't know all of them off the top of my head. They were both rural and urban school districts, large and small. We could certainly provide copies of that information for the board. I have copies, but I don't know that you necessarily want me to go through and read every school district. But there were a number that issued letters of support for SB 90 in the spring when it was newly introduced.
Member Rutherford.
Do you know how many districts participate in the Public Employees Health Trust and whether or not they continue to accept districts to join?
The number is reported in the Hay Group. We can look and find that. I think it's about 36% of districts participate with the trust. To my knowledge, the trust is not limiting new membership, so I think if individuals were interested in participating as part of the health trust, that there's a process by which they would go through. It's not an application, but go through selecting the trust as their provider.
I did have a question. In the testimony, we heard many people concerned that they were they were going to lose benefits, that benefits wouldn't be as good. From what I understood from reading the synopsis, I didn't read the whole Hay report, but from reading the synopsis, it sounded like they plan to save the money by pooling and not by cutting benefits. Can you talk to that at all?
Certainly, President Bowder, I'll take a shot at that, and then if Katie wants to add to it, she can certainly do so. What the Hay Group effectively did was looked at the 72 plan designs that are found among the 53 school districts in the state of Alaska, and then through their actuarial modeling, they normalized those plan designs and came up with basically three options that are consistent with what plan designs are currently offered to employees throughout the state of Alaska. It was a 25th percentile, which they refer to as their high deductible plan, a 50th percentile, and then a 75th percentile. And those are really meant to reflect current benefit offerings among school districts as they exist today. They did consolidate them into three different plan designs, but within the recommendation, they in no way were trying to strip plans of richness. Really, their option number three that they suggested and recommended to the Senate Finance Committee was those three plan designs with cost sharing built in so that there was equity for the employees. So if you were a single employee and you knew you weren't going to have high health costs, you could go for the high deductible health plan and have the premium covered in full, for instance. Or if you had a family and you knew you had ongoing health expenses, you might go for the richer plan design and pay a little bit more in premium. But they created equity and choice for the least amount of disruption to employees within the state of Alaska, and it was all school districts pooling together. But that was a consideration of the Hay Group to create not only limit the disruption for plan design, but to create equity amongst the employees so that they could, if they wanted to bear that risk, they would not have to pay as much out of pocket. And then if they wanted less risk and a richer benefit plan, it would cost a little bit more. But that was for the employee's benefit. Do you want to add?
Okay. And did the Hay Group recommend that the state states manage this, or did they have other recommendations?
The recommendation is that the Department of Administration under the commissioner manage this this healthcare pool.
Okay.
Just to clarify, it is a pool of only school district employees is what the recommendation was. Senate Bill 90 alludes to the combination of Alaska current state employees for the Alaska under the Alaska Care Plan pool with current school district employees. The Hay Group came back and said school districts need to create their own pool, and that would be managed under the Department of Administration, but would not be the Alaska Care Plan. That's their third option and what they recommended.
Are there any other questions from the board? Member Larson. Oh, I'm sorry. Member Michelson.
I need to, get a sense of, I mean, it's difficult
Because they get mired down in the benefits, no benefits, better, worse, premiums, no premiums, the history of the trust, what, you know, the insurance that I have through the state of Alaska, managed by ultimately by the state of Alaska, and you're kind of getting mired down in all of those things, then the resolution, if we pass it, encourages or supports the legislature's effort at pooling health care for all school district employees throughout the state. I guess my main question is, why are we here? Why is this issue before us? What do we gain by passing a resolution that supports the legislature's effort to do this? When, and are we having, will we have more resolutions with the other 10 pieces of legislation out there that are education related? And I just, you know, it's, you know, I feel like it's an education, or excuse me, it's a health insurance argument rather than, the other part that makes me a little uncomfortable with it, to be honest, is the fact that we're in a negotiation year with three labor contracts, and this may or may not be related to some of that, and here we are kind of arguing this out, I guess, a little bit. So I put a lot of thought into this in the last week, and I'm just trying not to get derailed by what's good and what's bad for employees, which I obviously do care about. But just the essence of what we're supposed to decide tonight, and why are we here with this resolution in front of us to where it come from? I mean, what's that we're getting from it?
I wanted to speak to this. A year ago, when we made up our legislative priorities, we went to the legislature and said we need help with insurance. Our health insurance is increasing way faster than our income. And we know that it's 160% increase over the last 10 years. So, and it's not just our school district, it's nationwide. We went to the legislature and said, we need help with this. We need help with our health insurance. It's one of our biggest cost drivers. So, I don't know if in response to that or if it was something that a legislature planned anyway, they brought forward SB 90. We, as a school board, one of our main jobs is to take care of the budget, to finance, to keep teachers in the classroom. With our biggest cost driver being health, we want to look at other options. We want to look at what's out there. So I think that's one reason this is before us. We went to the legislature, said we need help. We're also going to the legislature this year saying we need help. Insurance is one of our biggest cost drivers. I don't know if we can assign fault for that. It's a national problem. But we're in charge of the budget for here, and we want to keep teachers in the classroom. We want to provide for the public a good education. And many people in the public say a good education is less kids in the classroom, more teachers. We're not getting enough income to do that, so we're looking for cost savings. So that's, I believe, why this is before us. Member Rutherford.
I have to agree with Member Michelson, though, that I think that this particular resolution is unnecessary because we do have it clearly listed in our legislative priorities. Very clearly. I don't think we need to reiterate it. There are many education bills out there that are starting, and we're not weighing in on each one of them. And I think that at best it's unnecessary. At worst, it's inappropriate, like you said, because we are in negotiations, and I'm just uncomfortable with the direction the conversation goes. And really, our final whereas, I simply can't agree with it, where it says that the Hay Group says that there will be cost savings. The Hay Group did not clearly say that there will be cost savings because we don't know. No one knows. There will be administrative costs, whether it's the state or anyone else. There are just too many unknowns. And I know that the resolution does not say that it's supporting SB 90 specifically, but let's not kid ourselves. It will be used to support legislation because we have, because it's written just generally supportive of pooling. So I don't think it needs to be here. I don't even think we need to vote on it. I personally think it should be pulled.
Member Walton.
Are we at a time of comments or are we still at a question time?
We're supposed to be at a question time and I derailed that, so I'm sorry about that. Do you have a question?
The only question I have is in the packet we get the resolution, we get the PowerPoint, but we also get SB 90. So what are we supposed to think? That it's not connected? It is connected. And the question is, why would you put that in there if it's not supposed to be connected?
Again, probably for background information, and this resolution before us does not mention SB 90. It mentions evidence that there's savings to be realized. So, Dr. Paramo.
Member Pouncer, in fact, we wanted to be sure that there was a difference in that. So we provided it to show that specifically the Hay Group did not support that. And so that was deliberate, actually.
Can you guys stay around if we come up with any more questions? For deliberation, who would like to speak on this? Member Walton.
Well, I'm going to speak in opposition, I believe it, as has already been said, it's taking negotiations, taking information out of negotiations, it's removing it. It's our biggest cost driver because our legislature has not given us increases in things. Yes, we found money to supplant what's been missing through special one-time monies, and these one-time monies hold us hostage because we aren't able to plan, and so we have to keep putting our ideas there to we have to keep putting it so that we have to keep going and begging for money and saying, you know, we'll try to do something different. We'll try to come up with something different. I absolutely cannot support this in any way, and I am in agreement with others who have spoken so far. If, according to parliamentary procedure, the next person who speaks is supposed to speak in favor if there is anybody. So
I'm just going to take who wants to speak on it.
Okay.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak on this? Member Larson.
Well, I support the resolution. I was to the point where I support looking at different alternatives. And bear with me if I can try to get this out. Pooling, the state of Alaska, if you take the health care plan that I'm under, retirees, any increase in the state of Alaska health care, they pay for. It's kind of like an automatic thing. Anything that of our NEA increases, we pay for because the state won't pay for it. If somehow we could get the state to do the same thing with the NEA trust fund or the school district, because we virtually get 70% or 75% of our money from the state, we are virtually, our employees are in a way, roundabout way, state employees, but any increase in health care, any increase of steps, similar to the state has steps and ranges, they automatically get paid for. But with a school district, we automatically don't get paid for. We lose teachers every time we get increases, or we have to go to the legislation and ask for money for this or that or one-time money because they don't consider, for some reason, our health care increases, our fixed cost increases, and our steps and our any cost of living, of course, increases as something that they should look at, although their own employees, state employees, automatically get that when they negotiate a contract. When state employees, I think there's four or five unions negotiate a contract, regardless of what's in it, they get that paid for, but our employees don't. So that's where I'm mixed bag. I would like to see the state pay for it. If pooling is the answer for them to pay for it, fine, because we got a structural deficit. You saw it and I saw it, and one of our high-cost drivers is health insurance. Now, if we don't want to look at the resolution, it is in our request to the legislation, we can postpone this. But I'm in favor of looking for different alternatives to pay for our deficit, or we're going to end up losing CEA members, MSEA members. We're going to lose people in the next 2-3 years. And the other issue I've got with health care is our employees are going to pay more every year unless somebody can come up with a conclusion on how to pay for this increase. Even under our negotiated contract, I foresee employees going from, we were talking 85-15, going below 80-20 in the next, say, 3 or 4 years. Their health care will be, am I wrong on that, will be under 80 in say, 3 years. How do we stop that train wreck from occurring? So I guess there's a lot on the plate. Will a resolution do anything for this? I don't know. The other problem I have is sometimes NEA is a little stubborn in their trust fund. Like we can't get the aggregated claims to look at mitigators for future costs from them. And they're a little bit stingy with their information, but I can understand that also to a point. Whereas the state isn't. But that's just a small issue, but it is a big issue for us to plan mitigating costs in the future. I'm rambling along pretty good, aren't I? So I guess my proposal, there's so much on the plate, there's so many issues that maybe we should just postpone the resolution and try to figure this out in the next couple months and see where this legislation goes. Thank you.
Member Williams.
This was one of the topics we discussed in our student advisory board meeting 2 weeks ago, and we had a lot of confusion. A lot of our sixth graders didn't quite grasp what we were talking about, but there came to be a consensus on the board that this was an issue that mostly affected the educators. And our students have a lot of respect and a lot of trust in our educators, and they just wanted to say that they supported the educators' opinions and their voice on this subject. So the voice and the opinions that we heard today during public comment. Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion. Thank you. I'd like to make a motion to lay on the table.
Second that. Motion has been made and seconded. All right.
Can you clarify what that means?
Member Walton?
To lay on the table means that there's no debate and it's an up or down, and that's the way it goes. And it's just a majority, plain majority.
Not a super majority. All right. Let's call for the vote. Member Dillon. I'm sorry, we're voting to vote on the table. A yes vote would mean you agree with Member Welton, and no vote would mean you want to continue to discuss. Should I start at the other end? Okay. Sorry. A yes vote would be that you agree with Member Welton to stop discussion and stop. All right. Member Rutherford? Yes. Member Larson?
No.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Michelson?
Yes.
Member Scott?
No.
And I vote no. That means that we're going to lay it on the table and quit discussing this. I just wanted to make comment. I'm disappointed because I think this was a good discussion, and it is part of our job as a school board to discuss publicly issues that we face. So with that, we'll move on to item H.
I move item H14-061, the 2013-2014 school year calendar revisions. And this is revisions for particular schools.
Second. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on calendar year revisions? See no one to speak on this. Do we need a report from the board? Do we need a report from administration on this?
If the board has any questions, we can certainly answer them. And we did move this for action right away without having a non-action because the date comes prior to your next meeting. Thank you.
All right. So this this pertains to adding back a school day for Big Lake, Houston Middle, and Houston High Schools. They had an extra snow day that the rest of the school district did not have. So we're recommending that they do go to school on the 18th rather than having that as a parent-teacher conference day. I'm going to move their parent-teacher conference day to later in the afternoon and evening so that teachers and parents will have a chance to communicate, but that students will also have a school day so they don't run into making up days in the spring. So is there any comment on this from the board? Member Larson?
It's just a wonder to see the United States, the lower 48, have to take school days off for snow. Thank you.
All right. Is there any other comment? Is there any objection from the recommended change for our calendar for Big Lake, Houston High, and Houston Middle? Seeing no objection, that calendar change passes.
I move item 14-062, acceptance of the comprehensive annual financial report.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. We had our presentation earlier on this. Are there any questions for administration? Is there anybody in the public who would like to speak on this? I didn't think so. Okay. Are there any more questions for administration on this? No, we're not hearing it again. Member Welton.
The information that's in the whole printed packet really has, there's a lot of good information about the schools and the numbers of students that can fit in our schools and what the population is, but I thought it was really interesting on page 210, they give 10 years of our testing information about the ACTs and the SATs, and I think this is something that ought to, I'm going to photocopy and take it with me to Juneau to show that we, in those tests, that we are above the nation and above the rest of the state of Alaska.
Great. Good information. Member Larson.
This whole packet is on our website, is that correct?
Is the CAFR posted on the website? Okay, so they'd go to the finance department and be able to pull up the CAFR? Okay.
Under the accounting department. Under
okay.
Financial documents, either.
All right.
I just want to, I guess, say good job done because the auditors did, they are pretty meticulous and they didn't find even minute things that are wrong, which means the district is in good financial order and doing well and totally transparent by having it on the website for everybody to see. Thank you.
Dr. Palmer? And Dr. Palmer, I'd like to note as well that independent auditors actually, when asked a question last year at the assembly in regard to funding the school district, an independent auditor, in addition, not this gentleman, but someone else who didn't really know us personally but had seen our books, basically said, if your district is telling you they need this, you should believe them because they are lean and their material comes back is without fault. And so we actually had they work for the borough, not us. The borough sends them over to us to audit, and he let them know that if the district needs the money, you should believe them. So I thought that was a pretty good return on the work that we do in those business departments.
All right. Are there any other comments from the board? And is there any objection to accepting the comprehensive annual financial report? Seeing no objection, that passes. That moves us down to non-action items. We are scheduled to hear some legislative information just to kind of keep us updated on what's going on in Juneau. Dr. Perlman?
We just provided, as some of you are traveling, our brochures of your legislative requests, and in addition that you can share those. We printed up the legislative update for Senate Bill 139 and House Bill 278, which is the governor's education bill. I provided just a guess that the $85 for which the governor has placed in the base student allocation of the BSA will not be removed. It's pretty unprecedented that he came out this early with this bill. So we look, he is, you know, supporting the BSA, and we just look for the legislature to add comment to that and increase it. And that is why we took the liberty to not have the sky is falling because of our two things, our budget reserve as well as this budget. And if there's any more questions needed, many of the things that the governor proposed, Mat-Su School District already does in regard to charter schools, busing, work keys, testing. Those are all items that are already in our district, so they wouldn't be changes for us. And if there are any questions, we're able to do that. And, again, these funds in our budget, just so you know, is based on things staying neutral in regard to increases in employment. And so we can make it, but we know that that's not going to be our reality. So I don't want to paint the best picture, but I also don't want to paint the worst. Thank you.
Okay.
We could just argue to answer any questions. We wanted to be sure the board felt updated in what was happening in Juneau prior to many of you attending sessions.
I did have a question about HB 245, school funding required local contribution. If you can explain what that would mean for our district and if you've heard of it going anywhere.
This is HB 245, and Mr. Fulp, if you can comment on that.
Yes, I believe that's the bill that was brought forth by Tammy Wilson, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Representative Tammy Wilson. This bill, myself, this bill really sorry about that. This particular bill references the required local contribution, and the sponsor is really supporting the Ketchikan Assembly. They came out and actually hired an attorney to look into this and have held several meetings, but have tried to gain support across the state that organized boroughs, organized areas of the state are being penalized because there's a minimum required local contribution for them for education funding, and there's not in the REAAs. The basic need calculation that I went over earlier tonight, once you arrive at basic need for an REAA, that's funded entirely by the state, less an impact aid deductible, which many REAAs receive as a result of the ANCSA lands that are in their district. From that perspective, they're just saying that it's unfair and they're being penalized for something the state's responsible for, which is public education.
Have you heard if that's going anywhere?
Madam President, in all reality, I mean, from my perspective and knowing how the foundation formula works, I just don't see a substantial tax base that if there was a required local contribution for the REAAs, there's really no tax base, there's no economy in these areas to support any type of contribution. So from that perspective, it just doesn't really make sense for me. And then the other thing that Ketchikan's really asserting is that they're being penalized. But every municipality that I am aware of in the state of Alaska supports well beyond the minimum required. So it's something that their citizens and taxpayers want. They want to support education in their communities. They feel that it adds value. And they're asking their assemblies to support more than the minimum in most cases that I've seen. So I just don't know how they could basically assert that they're being penalized. And so from that perspective, it doesn't make sense to me. I think that there's a little bit of a false argument there.
Okay. Thank you. Member Larson.
Since you're up at the podium. Yeah, HB 220 and SB 111. The repeal of high school graduation qualifying exam. I heard tonight that if that goes through SAT, we'll replace it, or what?
I can actually answer that. That's an educational question. If the HSGQE is repealed, they still are asking for some type of an exam, and currently all of our juniors already take the work keys, which would count. But others that would be alternate are the SAT and ACT. All three of these, either any one of the three, qualifies also for the statewide scholarship. And so, just so you know, in Matsu, every 11th grader takes the work keys. So we have something in place, and that is actually a law. So, you know, that's a required test already. So what we're saying is basically to the state, repeal this because you're already giving us assessments that would qualify for having information on older children.
And I think the argument, too, is that the HSGQE is set up for 10th graders, and that it was confusing to some 10th graders who took it and passed it. Then they thought they were ready to be out of high school, whereas the SAT, ACT are nationally normed, and then the work keys is something that talks about are you ready to go to work? Where do you need to, what sections do you need to work on? Member Wilson? Williams, I'm sorry. Member Williams.
Dr. Cromwell, this question is directed at you. When you said that all juniors are already required to take the work keys, I know the state's willing to pay for one of the tests. Would that count as each student's paid for test?
I would assume that is simply because it's already a mandate. We could go back to the state and say, give us a choice, pay for whichever student test that they're required to take. And so, but currently there isn't a regulation that says all students need to take ACT and SAT, but there is for work keys. And so that's why they pay for it, because they have a mandate on it. But that's a very good idea, and I think it's something that we could look into.
One SAT, ACT has, you know, a number score, and there's no pass-fail work keys, I assume, does the other. How would this replace a high school exam that either is pass or fail, or you qualify for a diploma? How would that replace that?
They're not looking at a particular cut score to qualify for a diploma. They're basically seeking information on students and their learning. The test, the new test that they're going to look at is one that we was commissioned a couple of weeks ago. There was an RFP put out in the state. We're not using Smarty Balance. They're going to actually create a test, and that assessment is the one that they will look for to see and notice student growth, but it would not be, not any test thus far would not be tied to graduation.
Are there any other questions about this legislative update? All right, I'm sure when Ms. Member Welton and Member Scott get back from Juneau, they'll fill us in on what happened when they were down there. All right, with that, we'll move on to future items, future business. On February 19th, we have a regular school board meeting here. On March 5th, we also have a regular school board meeting. Not noticed on here was we usually have a March meeting with the borough, joint borough assembly and school board. I'm trying to get a hold of Mayor DeVilbiss to maybe schedule that for the first part of April. They've scheduled it right during spring break, and I know some people are not available during spring break. If we do it in April, that means we'd be able to discuss the budget that we have just turned into them. So we're pushing to put that in the first part of April. Is there any other future items, future business? Member Welton.
Just the budget dates for going out and presenting the budget to the public, can they be reiterated at this time?
Yes. If you could do that for us, please.
Mr. Fulp, if you could just state them out loud. I know the dates, but he knows the places. It is posted on our website. And their next, we did not do it on Valentine's Day this year, so it's next Wednesday and Thursday, and then the following Monday, Tuesday. But Mr. Fulp, using his smartphone, will get on our website and check out the exact schools, because we do try to move them around to different schools and neighborhoods.
Is he using the new app?
He's probably using our app, yeah. Member Rutherford could probably save them.
Yeah, I have been. The February 12th is at Fronteras. That's Wednesday. February 13th is at Kinnick. And then the next Monday, that's February 17th, it's at Peter Elementary. And then Tuesday the 18th, it's at Talkeetna Elementary.
Where's Talkeetna?
Where's Talkeetna?
Where's
Talkeetna? Or that way, or whatever way it is.
And the hours?
Oh, 6:30 to 8:30.
6:30 to 8:30. So this has been a real learning experience for many of my friends. They can come and learn about the school budget and school district budget. Also ask questions personally instead of, trying to figure it out from the website. Very helpful. If people would consider going to this, it'll be helpful for them. Member Larson.
Carly, can you repeat your meeting dates, please?
Will be on February 13th from 10 to 1 p.m. at Chudiak High School. And then our next February meeting is going to be the 26th at Connie High School at a regular time, 9 a.m. to noon.
Yes, it's in the Board Connect, but we can definitely add it. All right, are there any future items, future business, any further? Member
Rutherford.
Could we start thinking about our school visits? We did that thing that last year I really liked, a school in the spring, just before the craziness of graduation, and a school in the fall after school starts. So just so that we can give them a heads up to see who even wants us.
All right. All right, we'll look and see who wants us. Maybe we can go to one of the new schools also. It would be a nice time to see a new school.
We do have a board retreat date, and it would be June 2nd and 3rd in the evening hours. I think that would be helpful. Then we can go on vacation after that instead of waiting till the end of the month and doing a retreat. So June 2nd and 3rd, two evenings here at the school district. All right. Persons to be heard on non-agenda items. This is the second chance for people to speak if they would like. Member Welton, can you give us a real shortened version? Because I don't think anybody else is here.
Well, basically, you speak, you say your name, and you have 3 minutes, and you need to be nice. Thank you.
We're all about being nice here. So is there anyone who would like to come forward and speak to the board? All right. See, no one. We'll move on then. We're moving on to correspondence and board committee reports. Was there any board committee? Actually, I know there was. Member Welton, if you can report on the joint committee meeting.
Joint committee meeting. You were there.
I know I was.
We did have the update that we get from the borough on the bond projects, and we'll get that at our next meeting this month. Things are moving along pretty well. We had discussions about just a mention that we might try to look at how to collaborate or cooperate and have a sharing of I forget, the transportation or maintenance departments so that we can share maybe the facilities, at least with the borough, for our vehicles. I don't know that there's anything else on that. We talked about, we had our little handouts here and wowed people with our great PR work. I'm trying to think, was there anything else? I think that was it. Okay, it was a short meeting, very short. But those meetings are always good because we get to know the people who work on the borough side, and they get to know us.
All right, I think that was the only board committee report. We did all, as a school board, receive some correspondence from, I believe, a parent from Mat-Su Central. However, there was no signature, so we couldn't answer their questions back. So what we've done is had the Mat-Su Central principal kind of answer general questions and assure the parents there that public dollars always flow through a school district and a school board. So that was what happened with that. We have gotten back to the hopefully we've gotten to the person who wrote that letter. Was there any other correspondence? All right. Comments from the school board and administration. Dr. Cromo.
Do you have anything?
I just wanted to remind everybody that it was
National Process. Yes. Thank you. And I just wanted to mention an event that occurred. heard last Friday evening, and it was the Alaska Native and Science and Engineering Program, NSEP, which we were the first K-12 district to partner. They have now partnered with another district, the celebration, and it was held at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage. It was generally when we honor Alaska Native culture, we honor the arts, and certainly there were Alaska Native dancers and masks and carvings and spears that were presented as gifts. However, this evening was an evening to honor intellect, motivation, perseverance, and they celebrated. We had our students there in their NSEP uniform shirts, which was quite impressive. We had 9 tables of about 8 people each, so we were a significant force there. But it was a dynamic evening celebrating Alaska Native culture and intellect, like I said, in our state, celebrating kids from 6th grade all the way through engineering PhDs, and they received awards and thanks, and it was just a fabulous evening, culminating in the guest speaker was Captain Lovell from the Apollo 13 space flight. He is the gentleman who said, Houston, we have a problem. And so, like the movie, he went through the series of the troubles they had and the solutions, and certainly thanked the smart folks who were there in Houston figuring out the math problems when they needed to. So I just want to say our students represented our district and our state and certainly their family and culture well. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Larson.
I want to thank the public testimony tonight. I really appreciate all the input, and I appreciate to see that Muskox showed up in group. I also we did talk a little bit about the old, what we expect for kindergarten, but I just want to reiterate, I'm old enough to remember when we used to take naps. And, I think that's probably a good thing to go back to. And not only did the kindergartners go nap, but I only remember one time looking through the chairs and seeing the teacher laying down sleeping also. So it would be good for both, so. Again, I want to thank you for the public testimony. Any public testimony, regardless of what side of what side of an event or what side of a subject, it's good to have for us as board members to know what the arguments are. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. I too want to thank the people who testified and encourage everyone. I love public testimony and encourage you to participate in legislative public testimony because that's where a lot of your comments, I think, need to be heard. I also want to ask everyone to please promote those budget meetings. We're going to get the word out as best we can, but I really think the district has done a great job of bringing that budget into about as plain language as it can get, and it really can be understood, and it's a great place to get questions answered, and I think people might hear about these budget meetings and think, oh, I don't, will it be boring? Will I sound stupid? It really is a great place to get questions answered and to just have a little understanding, if nothing else, so they can more understand the debates going on in Juneau. So please promote them in your schools if one is happening at your school and with everyone you know. Also, I attended the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce presentation of the survey that was done by Northern Economics for the Partnership-Led Public Education, where they surveyed over 1,200 educators and over 800 parents about issues that affect them in the classroom, trying to get some data out to policymakers that is hopefully outside of most of the political hot buttons. They did not talk about funding at all in the survey, and it was great. I can't say enough about it. And none of it is all that new if you spent any time in the classroom, but a lot of it are things that the general public probably doesn't know and needs to hear because, like I said, 1,200 educators, and they said that they had a statistically significant number of responders from
Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Mat-Su each individually. So we definitely had people, significant number of people who responded. So I think we should, as soon as they release that written report, or if we can get someone to come out and do a presentation out here, we should pay attention to it. The big takeaways I took from it were that the top three items educators identified as obstacles to in their classrooms were, they were all three items that aren't even really under our control as a district. They were community issues. They were community substance abuse, and they differentiated that from student substance abuse. They didn't find that to be a big problem. I mean, where it's identified and it's dealt with. It's community, back home, the community substance abuse, domestic violence, and absenteeism. All these are things that are community problems that the community needs to address as a whole, in a bit, you know, bigger than what we can do. The one takeaway I took, though, that we can do something was, it was sad, it was over half, but in the urban areas that we'd fall into, it was about 40% of educators responded that they did not feel supported in their, by their district or in their community, especially their community. And that's something that I think we can take a look at in our retreat. I mean, employees need to feel valued. They're part of a team. If they're on your team, then you must value them, or you would have gotten rid of them. You know, so if they're part of the team, then anyone, you know, as a manager for a long time and now self-employed, I know it's one of the most important things is that the employees feel valued. And I know we do value them, just maybe it's not felt or communicated. And we can also impact what the public thinks of our employees, too, by how we treat them and how we talk about them. So I think that's something we should talk about. And last but not least, I got to go to Palmer's Got Talent last weekend at Palmer High School, and it was awesome. It was just great. That young man who did our app, Sterling Matthew, was one of the MCs, along with another young man. They were very funny, and they had amazing bands. They had singers, solo singers, duets. They had a couple of young men stood up and did a little joke sequence, comedy sequence. They were all very talented. They were having such a good time. I can't say enough about Mr. Harris, the music teacher there, because he appeared to be in charge of that. It was really a positive event to go to, and I encourage it. I guess Wasilla High has one, Colony High has one, and Palmer High has one every year. So go to your local talent show. It's good entertainment.
Member Derman.
I would like to reiterate what members Larson and Rutherford have said, and thank you all for your public testimony. It does mean a lot. This insurance issue is something that pounds in my head constantly, and it goes round and round and round. And I don't know the answer, because it's not only a problem for us here in the Mat-Su, it's a national problem, and it continues to reverberate. So I am very hopeful, though, like Dr. Paramo has said, that we will find an answer, and I think that this is a group that can do that. So fingers are crossed, and again, thank you. As Member Rutherford said, please get out and go to those budget meetings, encourage people to go, and if it's nice weather, drive up to Talkeetna and say hello to us up there. That would be nice. On January 29th, I had the opportunity to work at the Homeless Connect that was at the Menard Center, and I can't tell you what an enjoyable day that was for me. I had been asked to be there by the United Way of Mat-Su, and with the work that I do at the Upper Susitna Senior Center, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience, and something that I hope to be able to go back and participate in again and again. As I spoke to many, many people, many of the participants there, and some children that came through, I don't know. I don't know the right words to share with you to tell you the impact that it had on me. But it reminded me of a quote that I read not too long ago, and I will just end my my statements to you with this quote. And it goes something like this: invest in a human soul. You never know when it might be a diamond in the rough. Thank you.
Member Williams.
I would just like to say that I'm personally excited to bring back to the Student Advisory Board the information that the district is going to be incorporating more electronic cigarettes. That's something that our group and student leaders across the district and across the state have been talking about. And I just hope to see you guys all there on the 13th at Chugiak. It's going to be a blast. It's first time ever, and we're really excited that it's actually happening.
Member Scott.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that, you know, sometimes it's, we hear news that alters the course of our lives, and while we're here and we're charged with a very serious duty of advancing policies and making decisions that drive the district, that it's important to always remember and keep very close to your heart those things that sustain you. And for all of us, I know that means family, and particularly for me, it means faith also. And I just wanted to put that out there as, and it seems to be a time where we hear terrible news, and just to keep that near and dear to your heart and in your mind. Thanks.
Member Michelson.
Last week I had the privilege of going to Florida, where it was actually colder than it was here, but also New Orleans, Louisiana, and driving around and kind of looking at the difference between the public schools and the private schools, and just kind of reflecting on, you know, the kind of the state of our schools, just the kind of the physical structure, the layout, and the good shape that our district seems to be in with kind of this brick and mortar. And then knowing also behind the scenes that there are really good things going on inside those schools, it kind of, as compared to places like New Orleans and some places in Florida, we really do have it good here in Alaska. So I was trying to keep that. That was a pretty good reminder for me. Since we met last, I had the privilege of, as well as President Powager, of volunteering at the Geography Bee at CMS, and that was quite fun. Heather Beard, one of the instructors there, did a really, really good job coordinating all of that. I can't remember the gentleman's name that won. It was an eighth grade boy, but congratulations goes out to him, and I think he now applies to go to some kind of a national competition. And I got to attend the Student Advisory Board with member Carly down there, and that was really enlightening. I'm trying to attend that every couple of months, but that was really, really interesting, and your student advisor does a really, really good job kind of keeping you guys on task and things like that, too. So that was a lot of fun. And last but not least, was able to also meet with Monica Goyette in instruction, and as I continue to kind of make my way around administration, but then eventually out into schools and start visiting more frequently with folks. And I appreciate your time, Monica, with all of that. We talked a lot about just really the kind of the assessment schedule. You know, how many assessments do we do with kids, and when do we do them, and how do they complement each other? Are we assessing for the right things, and that kind of thing, which is a real kind of a professional interest of mine as well. So anyway, I appreciate that, and thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, since we were last together, I did go to the Martin Luther King presentation special day last month, and I didn't see too many school district people there. When we had the day in school,
that was Martin Luther King Day, people had to go to the events. And now that we get the day off, very few people show up. I think that we need to remember the things that Martin Luther King Jr. did and his legacy, and that we ought to make sure that we show support in our community. I also went to the jazz concert, Palmer. It was regional, wasn't it? All the schools were involved. It was the Honor Band, Honor Choir, and that was at the First Baptist Church up here. A good venue, and it was very, very well done. And then the Student Advisory Board meeting. I have a lot of thoughts about how to make decisions. We have the little statement up here, is it good for children? We used to say, is it good for kids? But we had a school board member that didn't like the term kids. So we had to redo and make room for the whole thing to say children on there.
I'm sorry, I want to butt in.
Yeah.
Kids are baby goats.
Yeah, I know.
These are children.
That's children. And you can't see it, but it's here in front of us. But I also used to carry a card, and it's stuck in one of my other books. But it also lists out some things. Is it ethical? Is it prudent? Is it good for children? Those are the ways I look at making decisions. And sometimes there's emotional parts of making those decisions, and it's tough, but we do the best we can with the information we have, and we are required to do some research and to look at some different aspects of things. So just to let you know how I approach the issues most of the time. And, you know, I'm human. I'm going to screw up now and then. But that's the point is that I do take the time, and I think that it's all of us work pretty hard to be here in the hot seat. So that's my comments for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. I did attend the Geography Bee at Colony Middle School. It was great fun. The children did a good job. They did great with their United States geography. They kind of fell apart when it came to some of the world geography, but they are in middle school, so hopefully they will get there. So the Geography Bee was fun. I want to say that I appreciate high school counselors. My sons are, well, my freshman is getting ready to take his sophomore classes, and I think parents and the students would be lost without the help of their counselors helping them decide the courses, how to get where they want to go. So thank you to high school counselors this week. That is it for me. So we will, if I can have someone move us on into executive session, please.
I move to go into executive session the matters immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation. And tonight we have CEA negotiations, MSEA negotiations, the superintendent evaluation, and in the meeting will be the board members. We will have Luke Fulp, Gene Stone, and Katie Gardner, and Dr. Paramo, and Saul Frigo. All
right. I need a second on that, please.
I second it.
All right, so we are now in executive session.